I had the privilege of going to Proverbs 31, which says so much about what we want to talk about today. And I want to wish my mother a happy birthday, a happy Mother's Day, and also the rest of you mothers that are here as well. Today is Mother's Day, a day specifically set aside to honor our mother. If you're listening to this message this morning, it applies to you, because if you are a person, then you have had a mother. And even though this relationship is special to us today, it's not a new relationship. There's been many such relationships since the birth of Cain. And as long as Jesus tarries, there will be many more. But God has authored the role of mothers and mothering. God has authored the relationship of a mother and a child. This relationship and role, though lived out on this earth, was conceived in the mind of God. And there's a specialness about mothers that has always been and will always be. They give so much to the well-being of their children. The months of carrying the child in the womb, the pain of birth, the hours and hours spent in nurturing, teaching, and training, and many years later, being a friend and advisor. And so we want to look at this subject this morning. I had to think about Jesus' concern for his mother when he was on the cross in a time of great agony. Before we go to Proverbs 31, let's turn to John 19 and just look at those verses quickly here. John 19, verse 25 to 27. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister Mary, and the wife of Cleophas and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother, think about that phrase. No doubt Jesus was greatly distracted at that time. Not only was he in great pain, physical pain, he was also bearing the weight of the sins of the whole earth, hanging from nails driven through his hands and his legs, an extremely uncomfortable position. Every time that you needed to take a breath, you have to heave yourself up with your muscles so that your diaphragm can go down and so you can take a breath. So this was a time of great, great distraction. And yet, therefore he saw his mother, and the disciple standing by whom he loved, he said unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Then saith he to the disciple, Behold thy mother. And from that hour that disciple took her unto his own home. We see here on the cross, he gave John the responsibility to care for his mother, because he knew he would not be able to anymore. He was soon going to be buried in the tomb, then rise again, and not many days hence ascend unto his Father for his great work that he continues to do there. But Jesus had a great love for his mother, and we want to remember that today. Now you may turn to Proverbs 31, and I believe I'm going to read this whole chapter. Sometimes I think when there's a lengthy Bible reading at the beginning of a sermon, that it tends to put our minds to sleep. And so until we get done reading, then we're already getting a little drowsy. But there's so much in here that I would like to read it first. So please follow along. Proverbs 31:1, the words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. What, my son, and what the son of my womb, and what the son of my vows? Give not thy strength unto women, nor their ways to that which destroyeth kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law, and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish, and wine unto those that be of heavy hearts. Let him drink and forget his poverty, and remember his misery no more. Open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband to safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ship. She bringeth her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household, and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field, and buyeth it. With the fruit of her hand she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth out, not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle. and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hands to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. The first thought I'd like to take from this chapter is found in the first 9 verses. I see here Lemuel's mother. We don't know her name, but she must have been a godly woman. And here we see her taking the role of a teacher in Lemuel's life. And the lesson I'd like to draw from this morning is that godly mothers teach their children. They warn their sons and daughters about vices and pitfalls in life, just like she did to Lemuel in verse 3. Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroy kings. It's not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes to drink strong drink. This is an important aspect for godly women, for godly mothers to do. They need to teach their sons and their daughters. Mothers, teach your sons to be strong in character. That to be strong in character is of far greater value than to just be able to bench 200 pounds. Teach them to be strong in character is much better than to have the most powerful physique. There are many physically strong men in the world that are totally powerless to choose right and are bound by vices and addictions. There are many physically strong men in the world who don't have the strength to live for God. Help your sons to see that what God values and what the world promotes are light years away from each other. Mothers, teach your daughters that to ornament her heart with a meek and quiet spirit is of much greater value than to be cool and to be vogue and to be in style. That is what the Bible teaches in 1 Peter 3:3, whose adorning let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. Why would a girl not use her hair and her clothing to attract others, and instead be meek and quiet? That is not exciting. But we must trade our value system for God's. That is what we say we do when we become a Christian. When we die to ourselves and are raised to walk in newness of life, meek and quiet spirits are of great value to God. Looking at verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman for a price is far above rubies? Virtuous women are rare and valuable. Working with the public, I'm made aware of this all the time. Our wives and daughters are gems in the society we live in. I was just at the Martin's grocery store this past week, and as I left the register, right there in front of me was a cabinet with glass doors, and they were locked. And I looked through the locked doors, and I saw baby formula on the shelves. And I had such a twisted feeling in my gut, because what a contradiction. The reason the baby formula was behind locked glass doors was because mothers steal it. Think of a mother with a newborn child in her car seat, hiding a can of baby formula into her baby satchel. A mother raising her child with milk made from stolen formula. The fact that formula is under lock and key tells me it wasn't just a little getting stolen, but it got so prevalent that they chose to move it to the front of the store and lock it. Virtuous women are rare and valuable. The common sentiment that we read or that is shared is that a mother wants to raise her child and to teach him to have a godly character, but as he grows up, he develops bad associates, and so gets his good character becomes ruined. But as I see the testimony in that store, it's not so. It's not so. There are many mothers today that are raising their children with a twisted character. Verse 11, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. And the Amplified gives the thought of dishonest spoil. He doesn't need to do things dishonestly to gain more money, because he can trust his wife. The heart of her husband and her children, I'll put in here, do safely trust in her. The beauty of trust in a relationship. To many of us, trust is what we're used to. An earmark of Mennonite and Amish are that they are gullible. If you don't believe me, read the advertisements in the budget. And partly that stems from the fact that we are used to taking people at face value. We teach our children from little up. I teach my son, you need to accept what I say. I'm teaching him trust. We teach them to trust us and others. You need to do what your teacher says at school, your Sunday school teacher, the other adults. If they tell you to do something, you need to do that. We teach them to trust us and others. Trust is so integral to a functional home life. Wives and mothers, do your husband and children safely trust in you? Does your husband worry when you go yard sailing because he's afraid you'll buy things that'll bring a wrong influence into his home? Or can your children trust you with their secrets and problems, or will they hear you telling their friend's mother the next time you're together? A virtuous mother and wife will do her family good and not evil all the days of her life. Verse 13 to 16, we see that a virtuous woman is one of industry and also perception. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She riseth also while it's night and giveth meat to her household. Providing clothing for one's family is a work that a mother and a wife does. It's something that they think about and prepare for. My wife made some new summer pajamas for the children this week. That is what mothers do. They know their children need this. In the times of Proverbs, it was even a larger chore because she had to make the cloth as well. And if you're familiar with that process, it's a slow, tedious process. This process has become shortened considerably because of availability of cloth and sewing machines. But the principle of industry is the one we want to learn from this verse. And while I believe we have a healthy dose of industry in our congregation, remember, it was taught to you, teach it to others. In verse 15 to 16, we see the virtuous woman's perception coming out. She knew that to get the work done today, her household was going to have to get up early. And they needed breakfast before they were off to work. And so she got up earlier and made breakfast. Industry and perception. She knew that possibly her family was going to need more grape juice or more vinegar or more wine in the coming time. And so she considered that fact and decided it was better to buy that field that had a good price and to plant it with the vineyard, with the vine of her choice, and to harvest it themselves than to purchase it. Industry and perception. In verse 17, she girdeth her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. A virtuous woman knows that to care for her family, she needs strength herself. She needs spiritual strength, emotional strength, and physical strength. She realizes when her strength is running low and needs girding up. Perhaps it is a phone call to a friend for some encouragement. Perhaps it is a rest in the afternoon while the children are napping. Perhaps it's a time of meditation and prayer with God, or reading an inspirational book that your friend has loaned you. Or maybe it's time, Dad, to take the family to Georgia and visit your friends. Mothers and wives, you need that strength. In verse 20, a virtuous woman reaches out to those in her community. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. A woman, a virtuous woman, is one that is known for her thoughtfulness, her hospitality, her sharing, and her reaching out. I just think about the Shunammite woman in 2 Kings. She saw the need when Elisha came by her door on his journeys. She saw a need to make a little room so that he could rest. And so they did that. And she, I'm sure, was known as a virtuous woman. Be a minister of grace in others' lives. In verse 21, A virtuous woman has forethought. She thinks ahead to the things that her family may face and prepares for them. When winter comes, the children have boots and coats that fit them because mother thought ahead and prepared for that. When spring comes, mother knows how many peas and beans she needs to plant to last till next spring. Mother knows that little Johnny will be going off to Sunday school here soon, and so she teaches him to raise his hand before he talks. There's so many things that mothers think ahead and plan for. In verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. A virtuous woman is a great asset to her husband. Or as Proverbs 12:4 says, a virtuous woman is a crown to her husband. In this verse, it says the husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. Wives and mothers, you have a tremendous influence to your husband. You're his closest counselor. Use that privilege to help him make wise choices and decisions for your family. In verse 25, strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. A virtuous woman has excellent character. She clothes herself with strength and honor. Strength and honor are two valuable character traits. To be strong, to have the power to resist, to have the power to conquer, that is strength. Wrong influences are so prevalent today and are so blatant. You see them everywhere. You see them on billboards. You see them in reading material. You see them in public. You see them everywhere. We need strong mothers that say, I won't allow that in my home. I won't allow that disrespect in my home. I won't allow my teenagers to dress immodestly. I won't allow them to dress like a punk. I won't allow my teenagers to text obsessively. We need strong mothers that say, I will. I will teach my children to be respectful to others. I'll teach them to be reserved towards the opposite gender. I'll teach them to be modest in their clothes, in the way they walk, and the way they sit. I'll teach my children to dress respectfully. I'll teach my boys to take off their caps when they come inside. I'll teach them to tuck in their shirt tails. I'll teach them moderation in all things, even in texting. This week, I've read two interesting articles. One was about a Catholic school in the state of Arizona. It was an all-boys Catholic school, and they were competing in baseball tournament. But the school had a policy. This is how the statement the school released. It says, they had a strict policy prohibiting participation in co-ed athletics, and they believe in forming and educating boys and girls separately. And their principle was, teaching our boys to treat ladies with deference. We choose not to place them in an athletic competition where proper boundaries can only be respected with difficulty. Our school aims to instill in our boys a profound respect for women and girls. And so as they had played in this baseball tournament, finally came the last playoff was between them and another school. And the other school had a girl on their team. And this school forfeited the championship game and said, we won't play. Because we value this so much of teaching our boys to have a proper respect towards girls. And we realized that they felt that that was so difficult to maintain in playing together that they prohibited that. And so this made national news that this school, by default, the other school won because they wouldn't play them. Now, the point isn't whether you agree whether boys and girls should play together. That's not the point I'm bringing up here. The point is that there is a school in Arizona that wants their boys and girls to have a proper reserve towards each other. And that's what's amazing in this world today where there is no reserve. Is there in us a heart that would desire that our youth, our children, would know how to relate to the opposite gender in a right way, in a way that is healthy, in a way that produces or that is a seedbed for godly families to come. Second article I read was interesting as well. And this is about a little town in New Jersey, town of Fort Lee. And they have started to give tickets to people for texting while they walk across the street where there is a sidewalk. It's called jaywalking. They've had an increase of jaywalking in the town. And the police have noticed that the people that are the increase are people that are walking along, running their fingers, and without paying attention, they dart across the road in front of vehicles, which is extremely dangerous. So now to help people to be moderate and temperate in this thing, they are ticketing them to raise awareness of this. You can get an $85 fine if you walk across the street texting where there's no sidewalk in the town of Fort Lee, New Jersey. In the last month and a half, they've given out 117 tickets. Now, the point of bringing this up is, are we going to wait until the authorities in the land teach us moderation in things? Or shouldn't it be the work of parents and others to encourage moderation, yay, even texting? Is there a place in a Christian's life to be so obsessed? And I'm just pointing out one area here. There could be many. Is there a place in a Christian's life where he's so obsessed about something that he puts himself in harm and danger over it? Think about the lack of awareness as they're walking across the street doing that. A virtuous woman is clothed with honor. In verse 25, going to the second part in that verse, that she is clothed with honor. Honor is a keen sense of right and wrong, integrity, adherence to action or principles considered right. This honor is a very valuable character trait in life. And many people would bemoan that it's largely gone. But this honor is what makes an agreement work when there's no contract signed. This is what I'm talking about. This adherence to an action or a principle considered right. If I make an agreement, I'll stick to it. Honor will cause us to accept the short end of the deal on an agreement that turns out differently than we expect simply because we had agreed to it. We had made an agreement, things had changed, but we still abide by that. And here it says that a virtuous woman is clothed with that honor, and she teaches that honor. And a story I'd like to tell you to explain that. There was once some boys who told their brother that if he would slide off the hip roof of their barn, he would climb up to the top of the roof and slide off that hip roof to the ground, that they would pay him a dollar. And to that little boy, a dollar was worth a lot. So he climbed up to the top of the roof and slid off that hip roof. I think it was only like 7 foot off the ground from the bottom to the ground. But nevertheless, that would have been quite a ride. He got to the ground, got up, and he was okay. And he said to his brothers, I want my dollar. And they said, if you're crazy enough to slide off the barn roof, you don't deserve a dollar. Well, what does the little boy do? But he runs off to his father and says, Daddy, my brother said if I slide off the barn roof, they'll pay me a dollar, and I did it. Now they say, if you're crazy enough to do that, you don't deserve a dollar. And the father taught his son's honor. He said, if you made an agreement, you keep it. If you promise to pay him a dollar, whether he's crazy or not, you pay him his dollar. You choose what's right, not what is easiest. A virtuous woman is clothed in honor. In verse 26, it says she opened her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. A virtuous woman speaks wisely, and her counsel and instruction are given in kindness. A virtuous woman has given thought to her life. She's not living on impulses, but rather she is making decisions based on absolutes. I like the phrase, the law of kindness. I think this means that her counsel and instruction are given in kindness, but also right along with that, a virtuous woman understands that the kindest thing she can do to her child is to bring law into his life. Children that don't have the kindness of law in their life eventually become self-destructive. Recently, a young child, I don't know what his age was, and I didn't go to check out how old he was, but recently a young child became so violent in a public school, I think he even hurt the school principal, who's, I guess, trying to restrain him, that they called the police, and the police come in and handcuffed this little child. Now, I'm assuming he's probably like 8 or 10, somewhere in there. Pretty young child, handcuffed. What an uproar! The parents wanted to sue the school for handcuffing their child. Why would a little child need handcuffs? Because he never had the kindness of law in his life. He was never taught to respect authority. His parents, his school teachers, the policemen. Can you imagine the amount of lack of authority in a child's life where he's so violent that his school teacher can't control him, the principal can't control him, the policemen have to handcuff him? A virtuous woman brings a law of kindness into her children's lives. In verse 27, a virtuous woman looks well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness. She's perceptive to her children and the stages of life they're going through. She cares about who their friends are and how well they're doing in school. She eateth not the bread of idleness. The Amplified suggests that the bread of idleness would be self-pity, discontent, gossip. The virtuous woman chooses to make the best out of life. She chooses to look positively at changes or misfortunes that come her family's way because she has forethought. And in verse 28, her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Sometimes mothering seems like a thankless life. And although much energy is poured into children before they can even express thankfulness, but I want to say this morning that godly mothers are highly appreciated. Thank you for all that you do for us. And as husbands and fathers, it's our responsibility to tell them thank you. It's our responsibility to command our children to thank them. Thank them for breakfast, thank them for lunch and for supper. Pour thankfulness into their lives for all that they do. I want to praise my wife and my mother and all other godly mothers here this morning. You're an integral part of our family life, our church life, school life, and community life. If we would only stop and ponder, that segment was missing, how totally disastrous it would be. In concluding, verse 29, many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest all. What a fitting verse to conclude a Mother's Day sermon. Thou excellest them all. I'm so thankful for the happy, healthy families we have in our congregation. And you know, many, many pastors stood up this morning and preached to congregations. And most of them are preaching to a congregation that is full of dysfunctional families. That is the reality, the society we live in today. This is a bright spot. Many churches are dark spots. I'm so thankful to be part of an assembly that is actively trying to apply God's word in everyday life. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, in verse 30. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Favor is deceitful. You may think you have favor with someone and then it can change. It's deceiving. We can lose favor. Beauty is vain. Yes, it has its place, but as we grow older, we lose it. Our hair turns gray. It falls out. We get wrinkles. our waist is no longer what it was when we were 19. But a virtuous woman knows that this whole chapter and sermon are wrapped around the fear of God. Only a godly fear will build a character in a person to live as this virtuous woman does. Nothing else will do it. Only putting on Jesus Christ will cause me and you to bring forth the fruits of godliness. Verse 31, your own works praise you, and let her own works praise her in the gates. God bless you as you continue to persevere as a godly mother and wife. Let's bow for prayer. Eternal God, it's with fear and trembling we pray today, knowing that we fall short of your guidebook so much, and yet, God, we do so desire to apply in our life. I thank you for this passage that taught us so much this morning, and may we take it to heart. And whatever place God calls us to, whether it's a son or daughter, there's a father or mother, a brother or sister, or grandparent, oh God, that we would help each other to be virtuous. There's such a dearth of virtue in the world, and yet it's a shining earmark of your work in our hearts. And oh God, it's nothing else other than that. Because without you, there would be no virtue here. And so I give you all praise and honor. I praise you, God, for godly women, for virtuous women in our congregation, in our families, in our homes. Thank you for all those that have impacted my life personally. I pray that we would encourage that. We would encourage our young daughters, our teenage youth, to grow up to be virtuous like their mothers and their grandmothers, like other sisters in the congregation. I pray, oh God, that we would have a value system in our congregation, in our homes, that would help us choose the value of virtue over the perceived value of vice. God, thank us. Thank you for freeing us from those vices and instilling virtue in our hearts. But I pray that this would be a beautiful thing in our lives, and that it would be an attractive thing, an attractive character in our hearts, so that others would be attracted to it. The purity that you pour into our lives, the discipline that you bring in our lives, the many other aspects where through sanctification and many other mentors and guidances in our lives that we can be virtuous for you. And so as we go from this place, this coming week and many days hereafter, oh God, it behooves us to draw near to you. Because without you, there is no hope. And we so want this for our families. We so want this for those that we come in contact with, that they would know the beauty of virtue. So Lord, I just pray a blessing on this sermon. Pray a blessing also on Brother Tim and Brother Ernest, where they're sharing their work. Pray also for the others that aren't here. You know what they are, where they are, where they're sharing, where they are being an encouragement. I pray, oh God, that you would keep us safe in the hollow of your hand. Pray also for Brother Amon, that you'd be near to him this morning. Bless him abundantly with your spirit, with understanding from your word, from encouragement from others. And I just pray that your gospel will go forth with power in Jesus' name. Amen.